are not safe here. Season 1, The Outcast. Episode 3, A Hole in the Wall. If you're new to this podcast, welcome. Please start at episode 1. Are you ready? Katrina asked outside the door of Mr. J's class. Betty's palms were slick with sweat and her stomach hurt. She nodded. Katrina looked at her skeptically. I thought you were bad, she said. You stole a car, didn't you? This is just like that, except it's much smaller. And your dad is hundreds of miles away. Betty nodded again, still nauseated. I'm not really a planner. My crimes are more spur of the moment. Get over yourself, Katrina said as she opened the door. Mr. J was sitting on his desk again, rapping with four girls, one of whom was Valerie. Betty's heart leaped into her throat. She looked down, avoiding Valerie's eyes. Mr. J was deep in a story about what sounded like homoeroticism and postmodernism or something. Katrina and Betty made a beeline for the back of the room. Okay, Mr. J said, standing. Shall we start the salon? Katrina put her finger down her throat, miming puking. Betty giggled. She saw Kat in a seat nearby and smiled at her. Kat rolled her eyes towards Mr. J and Betty made a crazy circle motion next to her head. By the way, Mr. J said, I got through all your journals last night. He put his hand on his chest dramatically. A shared dream. A classic Cabin in the Woods tale. Supernatural stuff, he said cheekily. It's interesting to see how your minds are working together, creating this vision. He looked at Valerie. I especially enjoyed reading your interpretations, Valerie. She smiled at the class like she had won a prize. When her eyes fell on Betty, they hardened into a scowl. Betty looked away. Now, you're making your way through Moby Dick. How's it going? It's long, Mr. J, one of the girls said. It's transcendent, Valerie said. I really like how theatrical it was. You would, Valerie, Mr. J said, winking. I couldn't read it, Mr. J, another student said. Killing whales is too upsetting. Katrina turned to Betty with a hurry-up look. Betty blushed. Katrina rolled her eyes. Betty started. I didn't understand the blubber scene. The sperm scene. It was kind of... Betty paused. Gross? What did it mean? Mr. J jumped up as if from a hot stove. Gross, Betty! Exactly right! It was visceral. He walked over to the window at the side of the room, motioning for everyone to gather around. He perched on the windowsill as the students on the far side of the room got up from their desks. Katrina took this opportunity to hop up among the commotion and walk silently towards Mr. J's desk. Betty marveled at how quick and unafraid she looked. Betty kept her eyes on Mr. J so as not to give Katrina away. She was frozen. And Tashtego falls into the whale's head. He's swimming in sperm. Mr. J stood now, almost acting it out. The girls laughed, rapt. Betty stole a look at Katrina, keeping her head perfectly still. Katrina was on her hands and knees in front of Mr. J's desk. She held a bobby pin between her fingers and dug into the keyhole of the door on the bottom left. She jiggled it hard, but the metal was loose in the socket. It made a rattling sound. Katrina froze. Mr. J looked towards the desk and Betty jumped to her feet. Mr. J, can you explain the Lockean and Kantian part? I didn't understand that whole speech. He looked back towards the class. He motioned Betty towards the front. Okay, Betty, you're the sperm whale. And you, he pointed to a plain-looking student in a black and white striped dress, you're the other whale. From this vantage point, Betty could more easily see Katrina's progress. She had moved on to the upper row of drawers and was slipping her bobby pin in the locks more quickly. Suddenly, Betty saw Valerie start to turn her head towards the desk. She would see Katrina right away. Valerie! Betty shouted abruptly. Valerie looked towards her like she had just interrupted her wedding vows. Betty stammered, I'd love to know what you think about this part. It seems theatrical? Yes, Mr. J said. Good call, Betty. He motioned Valerie towards the front. She looked at Betty like Betty was dog shit she had stepped in. Betty looked towards the desk again, but Katrina wasn't there. Her heart skipped a beat. Did someone see Katrina from the hallway? Did she give up and bail class? But then she saw Katrina standing at the back. She smirked at Betty as she flashed the key in her palm, tucking her hair behind her ears. Betty stifled a giggle. They met outside his office during study hall. "He's definitely not going to be here?" Betty asked Katrina. "No, he's teaching this period. Delia and Kim are in his class right now." "But what if he comes up here for his notes or something?" Betty looked down the hallway as if someone would round the corner any minute. They were on the top floor of the building. The teachers' offices were all small and tucked inside one nook or another. Mr. J's was inside a small spire. They hovered outside the doorway, whispering as Katrina fiddled with the key. "Then go back to our room. I'll change your diaper when I'm done here." "Ha ha," Betty said. Katrina opened the door slowly. His room was a circle. He had custom curved bookcases across the walls. It was filled to the brim with books. His desk sat in the middle, messy with paper and two old mugs of coffee. Some piles of hardcover books were stacked in the middle of the floor. The window was open a crack. It looked down on the playing fields. It was where Betty had been assaulted only 2 nights ago. She touched her jaw gently. It was still tender. "Come on," Katrina whisper shouted at her. She was opening the desk drawers. Betty moved away from the window and joined her. "It's a mess, of course," she said. "Let's divide and conquer. You take the right side and I'll take the left. We don't have much time, so only investigate if it's clearly from or about Zelda." Katrina nodded. "The good news is it's messy as hell. He won't notice if we tipped his desk upside down," she said. They started through the drawers. Betty rifled through old exam papers, half-graded term papers, a moldy apple core and worn paperbacks when she heard Katrina gasp. "This is from her diary." She held up some ripped pages with a shaking hand. "He kept it. The motherfucker kept it. He didn't even give it to her family." "What does it say?" Betty said. Katrina sat at Mr. J's desk and read it while Betty hovered over her. She could see the red rising in Katrina's cheeks. Her hands were shaking. "Fuck," she said. "What?" "It doesn't say anything." She handed the papers to Betty sharply, like she wanted her to take them away. "I feel not like myself when I'm in your class," Betty read aloud. "Stop," Katrina said. "It's just a couple of pages about how much she loves him. It doesn't give us any information." Betty saw a drawing in the corner of one of the pages of what must have been Zelda. It had a heart around it and a little note that said, "My favorite student." "Why did he keep these, though?" "Because he's a narcissist," Katrina said. "But how did he get them?" Betty continued. "Didn't you say she left her diary in the forest?" "So?" Katrina asked, suddenly angry at Betty. "Well, if he ripped them out while she still had her diary, she would notice they were missing. And presumably, she would ask him about it. But if he didn't, then he found it in the woods. After." Katrina stared at Betty, thinking. "Let's keep looking," she said finally. They rifled through the desk in silence. The minutes ticked by and there was nothing. Katrina wandered to his bookshelf, scanning the spines with her fingertips. Just then, Betty noticed a skinny drawer towards the bottom of the desk. They had both missed it. It was locked. "Can you pick this lock?" Betty asked Katrina. Katrina crouched down next to her. She examined the keyhole briefly. "I don't know," she said, pulling a pin out of her hair. She stuck it in and wiggled it around. Nothing happened. She took another pin and turned them together in some intricate choreography. Still, nothing happened. "There must be something good in there," Katrina said. She lay on the ground and reached below the desk. Her arm, up to her shoulder, disappeared underneath it, and she scrunched her face in concentration. Then it brightened. "Got it," she said. "What kind of idiot locks the front of a backless drawer?" "An English teacher," Betty said. They both giggled as Katrina pulled a stack of folded papers from underneath the desk. They spread them on the floor. "What is it?" Betty asked. They studied in silence. It looked like two overlapping maps. There were stars on various overlapping lines and a list of latitudes and longitudes along the margin. 45 degrees north, 90 degrees west, 61 degrees north, 9 degrees east was at the top, with variations and crossed out coordinates down the line. "I can't make sense of this," Betty said. "This is the school," Katrina said. "Oh shit, really?" "Well, this part is." Katrina pointed to the left side of the map. "I can't tell what the other map is." Betty pulled out her notebook and copied some notes. She traced the parts of the map that were starred. "Are the stars in the woods?" she asked Katrina, who shrugged. "I can't tell what's going on, but the odds that it's in the woods are high. It's like a million acres of forest around the school. I'm actually surprised they were allowed to build this here." "Huh," Betty said, thinking. "Oh shit, it's 2:30, Katrina said, jumping up. They looked out the window and saw people streaming out onto the playing fields. They would be late to their next class. Even worse, Mr. J could come to his office any minute. "Watch the door," Katrina yelled as she folded up the papers and practically crawled under the desk to shove them back in. She grabbed her backpack as Betty held her palm up. "There's someone outside," she whispered. "Let me see." Katrina shoved her aside to look out the small window at the top of the door. An older woman with a gray bun and a giant sweater shuffled by. "Miss Hartigan," Katrina said, rolling her eyes. "Shh," Betty whispered, eyes wide. "She can't hear shit," Katrina said. "Watch." She opened the door and stomped out into the hall behind Miss Hartigan. She started doing jumping jacks. Miss Hartigan continued shuffling along, oblivious to Katrina behind her. Betty almost fell over laughing. She grabbed Katrina's arm to stop her mid-jumping jack. "Come on!" And they ran down the hall, disappearing into the shadows. The next day, Betty returned to the library during her free period. There had not been another collective nightmare or Valerie attack since the first and second night, respectively. Miss De Silva sat at her desk in the front, at the entrance to the library, the grand wooden arches perfectly aligned behind her. "Oh, hi, Betty," she said as Betty approached. Her hair was down and flowed well past her shoulders. She wore a purple dress. She looked like another student. "Hi, Miss De Silva. Back from our dream research?" she asked. "No," Betty smiled. "I'm looking for a map of the school, maybe? I don't know what I'm looking for." Betty wished she could tell Miss De Silva everything. What they found in Mr. J's desk, what was going on with the dreams, what they all suspected happened to Zelda. But she knew she couldn't trust a teacher, even a young, nice librarian. "Why don't you tell me what question you're trying to answer?" she said, taking her glasses off and leaning towards Betty. "Well," Betty said, thinking, "is the school connected to another place? Geographically, maybe?" "Huh. Do you have another place in mind?" "Oh," Betty said, "yeah, I do." She reached into her backpack for a notebook. "Wherever the latitude and longitude of 61 degrees north, 9 degrees east is." Miss De Silva laughed. "That is a very specific place. Let me see." She had a computer and typed something into it. "That's Scandinavia. Norway, specifically." Betty immediately thought of the lichen she and Kat had found. "Norway? Why Norway?" "Do you want to look at Scandinavian immigration to the region? Minnesota has a really large Scandinavian population, and we're right on the border." "Okay," Betty said. "Yeah, thank you." They started walking towards the history section of the library. "Do you mind if I ask what this project is for?" Miss De Silva asked. "It's not for school," Betty said, wishing she had kept it to herself. But she could trust Miss De Silva, couldn't she? "I'm just trying to find out more about the school in the area. I mean, now that I'm here." Why couldn't Betty sound normal, she thought. "That's great," Miss De Silva said. They were walking up the stairs now, to the second floor towards the back. "You know, I'm doing research on the Great Lakes Forest region," she said. "I mean, literary research." "Really?" Betty asked. "Yeah, I'm looking into lost stories. Stories that have either been literally lost or stories from marginalized people." "Well, maybe we can work together," Betty said, instantly regretting it. "I mean, I don't really know what I'm looking for, but I can share whatever I find." "That would be great," Ms. De Silva said. "Really great for your college applications, too." "I don't know about that," Betty said. 4 schools in 3 years doesn't look great." "It's what you do now that's important," Ms. De Silva said. They had arrived at the history section. She pointed out where everything was and left Betty to it. She watched her go back to her desk. She wondered if Ms. De Silva could help her, or if she was entrenched in the school. She wondered if she could trust anyone here. She sighed. She didn't have much time for research. Here's what she learned. Over 2 million Scandinavians came to the U.S. between 1820 and 1930. A large portion of them settled in the Great Lakes region. In the early 1800s, several countries in Scandinavia made the Lutheran Church the official state church and enforced its practice. At the same time, there was economic turmoil, mostly in the rural regions due to massive crop failures. Most immigrants integrated into society well, but a small group were left in the Great Lakes Forest as punishment. There are several theories as to why, but nothing was substantiated. They were called Utstat, or outcasts? It was lunchtime. They sat at their regular table. Kim wore all black, but had taken off her black lipstick because Mr. Manzini had threatened a demerit. She sat seething over her lentils. Delia accentuated her freckles with an oversized maroon sweater, and Tracy had drawn over her invisible eyebrows with a tiny arch. Katrina sat with her hair pulled over her face. "I went to the library again today," Betty said. "Oh, goody," Katrina said through her curls. "What's up your butt?" Kim asked. "Three words," Tracy said. "PMS." "I can't take any of you today," Katrina said, sitting back with her arms crossed. Katrina had been in a horrible mood since what they found in Mr. J's office. It was like Zelda's words weighed heavier and heavier on her shoulders as the hours went by. "I can't take this school anymore," Kim said, pushing her plate away. "Just one more year," Delia sang sarcastically. "One year and 3 months," Tracy added. "It'll fly by." Tracy and Delia laughed while Kim and Katrina glared at them. They all sat in silence. Betty worried that digging into all this Zelda stuff wasn't good for Katrina. Maybe the collective nightmare and their unofficial war with Valerie was weighing everybody down. And none of this would be happening if it weren't for Betty. She stared into her soup, wishing she could disappear into it. Suddenly, Delia said, "Are Kat and Valerie not friends anymore?" She was looking over at a table where Kat was alone, eating her lunch and reading. Valerie was at a table behind her with her minions. They glared at Kat from time to time, but Kat, in her wide-legged jeans and tight periwinkle sweater, couldn't have cared less. At least, that's what it looked like. "Thank God if she isn't. Kat's too good for Valerie," Tracy said. "I feel like Kat's a floater anyway," Kim said. "It can't be easy being the only black girl in this school," Katrina said. "It's not easy being one of three Asian girls," Kim said. "It sucks even for white people, and there are a million of us," Delia said. Everybody except Katrina laughed. "She's really nice," Betty said. "I actually have to go ask her something." She stood. "Are you sure she wasn't part of the group that helped Valerie beat the shit out of you?" Katrina said, smirking up at her. "No," Betty said, "of course not." Although now she couldn't be sure. "And she didn't beat the shit out of me," she added. "Yeah, because we saved your ass," Katrina said. "Don't listen to her, Betty," Tracy said. "We take any excuse to beat up Valerie and her friends." "Tell us what Kat says. Get the dirt on Val," Delia said as Betty walked towards Kat. She felt Valerie's eyes like hot beams, but she kept her gaze down. "Is it okay?" Betty asked, pointing towards a seat next to Kat. Kat looked up from her book, smiling. "Sure," she said. "I hope I'm not interrupting," Betty said, stealing a look at the cover of Kat's novel, Dr. Blood Money. "I love that book," she said. "Yeah, me too," Kat said. "I've read this so many times, it's embarrassing." Betty smiled, not knowing how to begin, so jumping in. "So I went to the library today. I was following up with something. And anyway, did it have something to do with the key you stole from Mr. J's desk?" Kat asked. "Oh, no, Betty started to lie, then realized it would be a waste of breath. "Please don't tell." "Oh my God, who would I tell? Mr. J? Mr. Wilbertson?" Kat bellowed. Betty laughed. "Thank you," she said. "I try to keep my head down till I get out of this place," Kat said. "These teachers are up to no good." "What do you mean?" Betty asked. Nothing. "What did you find at the library?" "Do you remember when we found the lichen on the root outside? And Miss Ronslum said it was lichen that usually grew in Scandinavia?" "Yeah, that was so weird." "Uh-huh. Well, in Mr. J's desk, we found a map of the school overlaid with some other map, and there were these coordinates on it, and it turns out those coordinates were in Scandinavia. Norway, specifically." Kat looked at her, intrigued but skeptical. "I also found out that there's been a ton of Scandinavian immigration here, like the most in the country." "So you think they brought their lichen with them?" "I don't know," Betty said, thinking. She realized she didn't have anything else to say. She stared at Kat stupidly. Kat said, "Maybe we can get a sample at our next forestry class. There's got to be a way to date lichen, right?" "I have no idea, but I bet Miss Ronsalem would love that." "She loves anybody who hasn't fallen asleep standing up." Betty laughed. "Okay, well, I just thought I should let you know. I can leave you alone now." The chair screeched loudly as she stood. "No," Kat said, smiling. "I mean, any time. Always up for a lichen chat." Betty laughed. "Thanks," she said. Katrina approached her on the way to assembly. "Did you tell Kat about what we found?" Katrina said. She looked angry. Her flannel shirt was pulled over her hands. Like her hair, it swallowed her. "No," Betty protested. "I mean, she saw you. Us." "God damn it!" Katrina slammed the wall with her open palm. Betty flinched. "Why are you talking to Kat about this? It's none of her business." "Isn't it all of our business? We all had the dream." "She wasn't Zelda's friend. And come to think of it, neither were you." Katrina stormed down the hallway and Betty followed her. "Look, we found something in forestry class that's connected to what we found in Mr. J's office. I tried to tell you at lunch, but you wouldn't listen. She actually has a good idea of how we can..." Katrina held her hand up, not looking at Betty, who struggled to keep up. "Don't want to hear it." Betty stopped while Katrina kept walking. "Fine," Betty yelled after her. "Quiet," a teacher in a blue pantsuit who seemed to come out of nowhere said to her. "Do you want a demerit?"
"No, sorry," Betty said, scurrying towards the assembly hall.
Mr. Wilbertson loomed at the front of what seemed like a church. There were pointed arches up the middle aisle and two side aisles with columns. Everything was dark wood, even the chairs, so hard it pressed into Betty's bones. She sat alone at the end of the aisle. The row of girls next to her she didn't know. They gave her side eye from time to time. Drafts floated around the hall like ghosts. Betty shivered. She spotted Katrina, also sitting alone at the back of the hall. She was in a row all alone until the teacher in the blue jumpsuit ushered her closer to the other students. Betty saw Katrina roll her eyes when the teacher couldn't see her, and she couldn't help but smile. She saw Tracy, Kim, and Delia sitting together on the outside edge of an aisle near the middle. They were somewhat obscured from the front by a giant column. Betty noted the seat for future assemblies. She saw the back of Valerie's head at the front. As if on cue, she turned, scanning the room. When she caught Betty's eyes, she glared at her. "Get out," she mouthed at her. Betty looked down, her heart pounding. She had nowhere to go. "Quiet!" Mrs. Albert stood at the front next to Mr. Wilbertson. She wore bright red lipstick, the same as when Betty first met her, and a black skirt suit. A light from above shone down on them both, casting shadows down their faces. "Welcome to our spring assembly," she continued. Mr. Wilbertson stood next to her as she spoke, arms clasped at his lower belly. He stared out at the students. Betty shivered. "Spring is a time of renewal, of rebirth. It's a time to leave your past behind and embrace what's in front of you." She paused dramatically. "It's our last assembly of the school year." Betty stole glances around her. Everyone seemed to listen intently. And something else. The air felt tight around Betty. Everyone seemed scared. Mrs. Albert sat at the edge of the stage near a column. Mr. Wilbertson's mustache spread across his face. It was a smile. "It's a pleasure to stand before you, as always. All of you came to us broken, bruised, unabashed. And like the caterpillar emerging from her cocoon in the spring, you are now all butterflies, beautiful, elegant ladies." Betty tried to catch Katrina's eye, but she stared straight at Mr. Wilbertson, scowling. "My message to you all this springtime, as we enter the second half of the semester, is to keep your heads down. Do your work, stay quiet, and recommit yourself to the cloisters. My door is open to you all. I mean that. I want each and every one of you to stop by my office if you feel like you're going off the path." He stared out at the room. Betty thought for a moment he looked at her for a beat too long. She felt herself blush. "That is all," he said abruptly, and stepped into the shadows of the front columns. The rest of the assembly was a blur. There were presentations from students and announcements from teachers and the school mantra that Betty still hadn't mastered. The one bright moment was a shared smirk between Katrina and Betty during the school mantra when everybody said, "Think before we act." She ran into Valerie after assembly. She was looking for Katrina to capitalize on their shared moment and make up. She didn't find her. She didn't find anyone. She was meandering her way back to the classrooms, lost in a small corridor between two strange offices, when two girls came out of nowhere and backed her into a corner. The wood was cold where it pressed against her skin.
"Excuse me," she said to them, trying to assert herself, but her voice faltered. The girls looked interchangeable. Pretty, white, long brown hair, thin arched brows. They smirked at her, saying nothing. Valerie rounded a corner. "I thought I told you to leave. Remember the other night? Or do we need to do that again?" She stood so close to Betty she could smell her breath, which was like strawberries. Betty pulled every ounce of strength she could muster, but her voice shook as she spoke. "Look, my parents aren't going to come get me, so..." "Then run away," Valerie interrupted her. "Valerie, shared dreams are really common. If you would actually read about..." Valerie interrupted again, this time with a punch in the stomach. Betty doubled over in pain. In all the trouble she had gotten herself into, she had never been punched in the stomach. Her lungs felt like they were going to explode. Her breath peeled in like a screeching tire. "I don't care how you do it, but you're going to get out of here, witch." Valerie leaned down as she said this, speaking into Betty's ear. Betty lifted her head and met Valerie's eyes. "Maybe I am a witch," Betty said. She saw a glimmer of uncertainty in Valerie's eyes. Betty clutched her stomach and stood up a little straighter. "If you keep fucking with me, I'm going to get angry. I'm going to cast a spell on you." Valerie laughed, but Betty could tell that it got into her. Betty grabbed Valerie's hair. "Maybe I'll make your hair fall out." The two brunettes grabbed Betty's arms and pulled her away from Valerie. "And that would just be the beginning," Betty yelled. Valerie took a step back. "Let's go," she said to the two other girls. She pointed at Betty, now standing far enough away that she fully extended her arm to do so. "If we have another nightmare, you're dead." They rounded the corner and Betty listened to their footsteps fade away down the hall. She looked around, the pain in her stomach subsiding. She was still lost. Betty was on the ground. She had just tripped over the green moss-covered root and could feel her fingers digging into the mud as she pulled herself up, away from the footsteps that were coming for her, just to the left of her head. She screamed, pulled herself up, and ran blindly off the path into deeper darkness. She knew this time that she would run into the cabin. She rammed her shoulder against the front door and tumbled inside. She sat in silence on the floor, back against the door, panting. She looked around the cabin, knowing what she'd find. An overturned chair in the small kitchen, the couch pushed up against the back door. The moonlight flowed through the window. Betty looked up the stairs, somehow more frightened of the moaning because she was anticipating it. Then it came, a low rumbling of agony. Betty jumped, her heart pounding in her chest. She wanted to get away from the sound and realize this time that she could. She was no longer drawn to the stairs, towards the source of the moaning and maybe the source of its cause. She could go where she wanted, and that was towards the couch that was pushed up against the back door. Someone wanted to keep something out. Betty walked through the dark, hulking shadows of the disturbed cabin furniture towards the back door. That's when she saw the crack in the wall. It ran from the door frame through the ceiling up the wall above. The couch sat impotent in front of the crack in the house, as if a giant had pulled one of the panels of wood without a care in the world. And that's when she saw the blood. It dripped down the edges of the crack, pooling on the ground and spreading, seeping under the legs of the couch. She looked up to see a drop hanging from the tip of a sharp splinter jutting out near the top of the wall's gash. It hung for a moment, then dropped with a plop on the puddle near Betty's feet. That was when the cabin shook, as if it would be ripped apart completely. Betty noticed that right before the sound that almost deafened her, that threw her to the ground, something had obscured the moon, just for a moment. Before the boom, there was a moment of complete darkness. Betty screamed herself awake. She looked over to see Katrina sitting up in bed, panting and sticky with sweat. They stared at each other. Katrina was crying. "Did you see it?" she asked. Betty nodded, then rubbed her eyes. "You saw the arm?" Betty looked up at her sharply. "The arm?" "Upstairs," Katrina said. Betty got up and sat at the end of Katrina's bed. "Tell me what you saw," she said. Katrina looked in shock. "The beginning was the same. Someone was chasing me. I ran into the cabin, then I heard the moaning sound. I didn't want to go upstairs, but it was like my feet had a mind of their own. I walked up the stairs as the moaning got louder and, like, more urgent. The more I heard it, the more I knew it was Zelda. But I still didn't want to go. I was so scared. Katrina stopped. She was crying. "It's okay," Betty whispered. "You would have run up the stairs if this was real." Katrina looked up at her. "Isn't this real?" Betty shook her head. There was an arm. Upstairs. An arm without a body. It sat at the very top of the stairs. The fingers were curled into the palm like the person was asleep. There were like 50 friendship bracelets. Then I saw where the shoulder should be. It just stopped. "Is that when you woke up?" Katrina nodded. "I heard the crash again, same as before." "That's not what happened in my dream," Betty said. She started to pace the room. "When I heard the moaning, I went the other way, towards the back of the cabin. There was a big hole in the wall, like it had been struck by lightning or like a bear had attacked the house, but of course no bear could do that." Katrina had pulled her knees up into her chest. Betty couldn't tell if she was listening. "There was blood on the wall," Betty finished. "Then I heard the crash and woke up." Betty stopped pacing in front of Katrina. Katrina's nose was on her kneecaps. "Katrina," Betty said, "are you even listening?" She kept her position for a moment, then looked up. "Whoever killed Zelda," she said, "has killed before." Thank you for listening to season one of We Are Not Safe Here, The Outcast. Come back next week for episode 4. Rate, review, and subscribe if you like this podcast, and tell your friends about it. Thank you so much for listening. We are not safe here.